Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself. We visited with one of the longest serving businesses in Palo Alto, California, located on its Real Bike Boulevard, Park Avenue. Park Automotive has been led by a brilliant businessman mechanic since 1977. Listen as Don Armstrong tells us how Palo Alto and the automotive industry both have changed here over the last three decades. And as you listen to Don, bear in mind that as one of our NBG sponsors, his support has been crucial, for which I'm extremely grateful. He has given the 40-foot bus we will be using to get the bicycle to the East Coast, as it supports my ride across the USA on the Eagle, a safe haven. So, Don, how you doing today, guy?
Martin, I'm doing fine.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, listen, you and I both grew up in the Bay Area, and in the East Bay in particular, where pretty much where cars were king. You know, we had GM, we had the Ford plant, there was Peterbilt, where I used to work during my college summers, and the Fremont Drag, and the East 14th, the Strip, and I remember when I used to come over to Palo Alto that it was this side of the bay. There was just lots of poor engineers who weren't making the kind of money they make now. Is it my imagination, or was the car scene really different on this side of the bay?
Car scene was different on this side of the bay. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of drag racing. A lot of stuff was going on. El Camino was a hot spot then.
El Camino was a hot spot. Now, when you said there was drag racing on this side also, on the Palo Alto side?
Yeah.
There was.
Saturday night cruise nights on El Camino.
Oh, really? Wow, I didn't even know about that. Huh. So, it wasn't anywhere near as crazy ballistic as it was in the East Bay, was it?
Well, you take Friday nights and Saturday nights, it was.
Really?
Just about exactly the same.
Huh. Okay.
It was a car show.
Really? Okay. Well, let's begin by just telling my listeners where you started, when you started business at your current location there on the Real Bike Boulevard in Palo Alto on 3040 Park. When did you begin business there?
I started business, opened up business in October of 1977.
1977. Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. But you started working there in the 60s, is that correct?
I started working at this at the same location in about 1972.
72, okay. Mm-hmm. Got it. All right. So you were in Palo Alto kind of toward the end of the hippie era, I guess, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Did you ever work on any love buses?
That was more for the Berkeley crowd. There wasn't okay. much of that over here.
All right. Well, you know, what we see now on Park Avenue are a few Mercedes-Benz dealers, some associated businesses, and lots of office buildings and lots of youngest engineer types walking about. What was Park Avenue like when you first opened up? What was the business like back then? And what was Park Avenue like back in the 70s?
Park Boulevard in the 70s was a pretty vacant area. We had a few businesses. We had lumber shops actually down the street, a lumber yard down the street, railroad track, and some railroad activity just across the street from us. There was a salt facility across the street, Service Off. They did the water softening salt, that sort of stuff. We had train activity around here. Yeah, pretty much an industrial area.
Huh. Wow. So it's completely changed now. Is that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Wow.
Big changes.
Huh.
Large office buildings, a lot of homes gone, no more lumber yards, no more railroad activity.
Was there a lot of car-oriented businesses, like car repair places, upholstery shops, things like that?
No. No? Not in this general area. Uh-huh. We were about one of the few auto repair shops in the area. Mm-hmm. We saw the rise of the BMW dealer across the street from us. Mm-hmm. We saw him build the Mercedes service down the street. Mm-hmm. We also saw him build another auto repair facility that was just down the road from us, which has changed hands several times.
Yeah.
But it is now a Mercedes service also.
Huh. But I remember it's directly across the street from you almost, where now I think they've got an office building for an online security operation. That was a Ferrari dealer.
They went through a couple of them. It started out as a BMW, and then they handle Lamborghini.
Yeah.
They handled some Italian models, some Ferrari sales, Lamborghini sales. The dealerships grew in popularity as the elite electronics bunch started to buy the more expensive cars, and then they decided that they wanted to more of an exposure along a more popular route. So, and this Park Boulevard wasn't it.
Wasn't it? Or
was not the place.
Was not it. So where did they move to?
They moved up onto the El Camino Real and moved out of Palo Alto, which was more new car consumer oriented.
Okay. Let's talk about that building right behind you, the Fry's Electronics Superstore.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like back in the 70s? Was it a big warehouse? It's a big warehouse, and there were lots of different businesses in it now. Was it lots of little businesses back then?
There was lots of small businesses. It started out as a canning factory for a lot of the local products that were grown locally, whether it be peaches, apricots, that sort
really?
Of stuff.
Huh.
And cherries.
Really? Wow.
And it was a canning facility for them.
So when did Fry's go in?
Fry's went in probably in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm. And
Fry's came in as a small electronics firm.
Uh-huh.
And they just blossomed into a huge corporation.
Uh-huh.
And now they're probably one of the largest electronics.
Well, yeah, without question, they're huge. They're
on
us. Wow! And so when they came, did you see like gradually the business mix started kind of changing when Fry's came in?
Well, the business has started changing a lot because they had a lot of electronics boom going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the price to rent buildings in this particular town just skyrocketed within a few short months. And a lot of businesses that were local at one time now could not afford the local rents.
Hmm. Wow.
And so a lot of them moved out, which left a big void in in the warehouse next door.
Right. I see.
So, and Fry's was willing to do the work to move in there and do all the improvements to make a big electronic store.
Okay. Well, you know, we talked a little bit, you touched on the rail activity in and around your shop. You're located on a funny-shaped lot.
Yeah.
You've got the railroad train that runs behind you. Looks like it must have serviced the warehouse, the fruits and the veg back then.
Right. We were surrounded by railroad tracks on the north and south side.
Okay. And when did that end? When was it not active? It seems like those haven't been used for years.
Right. All the property that used to grow all the cherries and the orchards and for the apricots and peaches, all those went into subdivisions and expensive homes.
Mm-hmm.
And so they eventually yanked out the railroad tracks and made it a bicycle path up to and including into Los Gatos.
Okay, you mean, away from Palo Alto. Okay.
Away from Palo Alto.
Right, but all the way coming into Palo Alto, there where you're at on the bike boulevard, the real bike boulevard in Palo Alto, and it connected up with, the SP tracks?
Right.
What was going on there? Was that spur active at all?
The spur was active up until about the same time as Fry's moved in, and then there was a change of hands on the ownership of the property. Mm-hmm. And then Southern Pacific at that time decided to start selling off some of their surplus land that they didn't use. So they pulled out all the railroad tracks that surrounded us, and then that became a parking lot and property of the company next door.
So that's about when you got the real nice cyclone fence around and the ivy the landscaping and all that went in. Okay, and that was probably the 90s, early 90s?
Yeah, early 90s.
Yeah? Wow, okay, got it. Well, let's talk about your shop. You're a general service mechanic, and that means you can work on any kind of car, right?
Almost any kind.
Okay, which is a rare breed in this day of specializing. And
yes, it is going specialty.
Yeah. Are there not tools that you might need for a certain car that comes in once a year that would not make it cost effective for you to service them?
Well, tooling is one issue, but a lot of it is technology differences between manufacturers. And the technology differences between the two would dictate, do I service anything on this car, or do I let somebody who knows more about it service it?
So how do you get around that?
A lot of times I will bring a car in and actually take a look at it for a while and then determine if it's something that we can live with, something that we can service.
There's some how often do you say, I can't do this?
I do it all the time.
Really?
Huh. I do it all the time.
Really? So you're just honest with him. You say, I can't give you a competitive quote, so you have to try someone else?
Exactly.
Wow.
I can't stay competitive because on some of the vehicles, nowadays it takes several thousand dollars worth of specialty tools to work or even service some of them.
Would that be Citroëns, I guess, for sure?
A lot of BMWs, lot of Mercedes, Jaguars, a lot of British cars are that way anymore.
Huh, wow. Okay, so it's like, but you can pretty much figure out any kind of, you're like a doctor, man. I've seen you figure out just about anything. Has there ever been a repair you've been unable to figure out?
There have been several.
There
A lot of it is like early on electronics type of stuff.
Yeah.
You just never saw it happen. Mm-hmm. And then as the vehicle got older, you know, word gets around what's going on, or you saw a repeat of a similar problem. And then you start checking around with the, other people that also do the similar jobs, and you find out what makes them tick and what goes on and what's popular now.
So you read the trade journals.
We keep up with everything.
Yeah. Wow. How big of an investment do you have in tools?
Oh, geez.
Hundreds of thousands.
Basic hand tools. Well over 10,000.
That's all.
Well over $10,000, and that doesn't include all the electronic stuff that we have to keep up with. And there's another $20,000 to $30,000.
And then how much money are you spending every month, week with Mac Tool, with the tool guy that comes around that I see all the time coming around?
I would say an average of $200 a month. Some months not so much. Some other months a lot.
Wow. Right next to you is a building, or across the street next to you is what, Telligent? Is that what that was?
Across the street?
Same side of the street.
There was one company called Agilent.
Agilent. Now, when they closed, was that a big hit for you?
No, because they weren't actually open very long. It was a Hewlett-Packard building.
Right.
And they did manufacturing over there. They did their own machine shop work, casting for a lot of computer components.
Right.
And then that got outsourced to third world countries, and they closed them up.
Yeah, geez.
So Agilent moved in. Google was supposed to move in, and now it's AOL is in, but they're currently rehabilitating the inside of a new building to make the new people happy over there.
AOL is in that building.
AOL is
You're
is
kidding
moving
me.
In.
They're yeah, moving in. A, wow.
Skeleton crew over there now.
But so the AOL is planning on fully taking over residence there, huh?
Yes, they are.
Wow. And it's going to be a full complement of AOL staff, huh?
I guess, but I haven't seen anything yet.
Okay.
You know, I see a lot of construction stuff.
Right, right. Wow. Do you get a lot of business from Stanford, the university?
We used to get an awful lot of business from Stanford, mm-hmm. but not so much anymore. You know, you got a few students. We have several students who have come over there, have read about us, or have heard about us through word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have come in, and we've been lifelong customers.
Professors?
Pardon?
You got any professors that come in that have been?
We do have
time?
A couple of those.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh. So why do you think Stanford has slowed down for you?
I think the fact that Stanford has got a lot of their own bus shuttle service, so the people who actually go to school there don't need cars anymore.
Got it. Right, right. It's a very bike-friendly campus.
It is a bike-friendly campus. A beautiful campus with bikes all around.
Yeah? Wow. And in fact, I don't think they want their freshman students to have cars or something like that. Is that possible?
It's possible that they prefer them not to be running all over town.
Yeah. As I said earlier, I've seen you work, and I compare your skills really to those of a doctor in sussing out a problem. Do you feel that all your years in the business really, in the long run, save your customers money?
I think so.
Yeah? Okay.
We like to tell them what they're up against.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we provide a good service to them. And then at some point, you know, like anybody that's, you know, been in this business for a while, sometimes the car has reached a point where it's just, you know, it's cost effective to not dump any more money into it.
Right, right. And you tell them that?
And we have to tell them that.
Not thinking that the job security of...
Well, it costs me money every time a person gets rid of an older car.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in the long run, if they realize that a new car is an option for them, that we've actually probably saved them from breakdowns on the road, mm-hmm. Saved them the grief of dumping more money into a vehicle that mm-hmm. can't possibly repair.
Wow.
You know, eventually we get them back.
Yeah, yeah. Because I've been there, you know, with the bus where you've told people mm-hmm. that, hey, I'm not going to fix this because it's just all it's doing is forestalling other problems I see mm-hmm. that are going to crop up. Wow. That is that's quite honest. Honest to Abe, I guess one could say. cars go a lot longer now without being serviced. How long?
They do.
And how does that affect you?
It's changed our repair procedures quite a bit. Whereas, you know, the old days you used to do, you know, oil changes every 2,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
But oil changes can go 5,000 miles now without mm-hmm. any particular problems.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people are driving more, so they still have to service them.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Well, you know, also one time you told me that engines don't die anymore.
They don't.
And the reason people get rid of their cars is because the taillights go out, the window switches go, the door locks mm-hmm. start fritzing on them, and it gets to be such a hassle and such an expense. People just mm-hmm. they buy another car. That's correct?
Right. You know, the engine and transmissions are well going well over 150,000 miles now.
Uh-huh.
But some of the rest of the cars, you know, getting dilapidated. The mm-hmm. switches, the interior, the steering. So even though the car runs good, it's falling apart around it.
Mm-hmm. I've seen you fix power window switches.
Oh, yes.
And every time it's like a Disneyland experience for you. You know, it's like you're learning as you go.
Mm-hmm.
How often is that? I mean, how the kinds of repair work, some of the repairs you're doing, could you have foreseen yourself doing this 5 years ago, 10 years ago? Would you turn that kind of stuff away?
No, actually, we've done it all along. You know, back when, you know, roll-up hand windows were the thing to have.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's more electronics, mm-hmm. you know, electric door locks, electric windows. Mm-hmm. Electric seats, electric mirrors, you know, it just goes on and on.
And you have to fix those?
and we have to fix those. nobody can open a trunk anymore with a key. They have to do it with an electric switch.
Right. Wow.
So, and it just puts more demand on the electric system, the batteries, cables, etc.
You know, I remember back when I used to work on cars, back in this, back a number of decades ago, really now, and people used to be, in fact, I knew guys when the smog stuff first started coming out in California. I had friends that could, I can get a smog certificate to pass smog just from a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Those days are long gone. Is that correct?
Long gone.
Yeah, and they put the tailpipe right at the shop, goes right to the DMV or goes right into the state. And
all electronic. Yeah, you plug your vehicle into the smog machine, and then you plug the electronics into the computer on the smog machine, and the machine actually looks at everything.
Hmm.
So it's got to pass and or fail at all kinds of different points now, just not pass visual inspections.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And it's getting more stringent.
How do you feel about that? Do you feel like our cars are cleaner? Are they not now? They're better
cars
and cleaner.
Cars are much cleaner.
Yeah, and yet that's been kind of a. I've also heard you talk about how I remember that one campaign they had of taking the clunkers off the road, and it just got to be an abused program, and it's been a real irritant for you.
It started out as good intent, mm-hmm. but nobody thought it through. They only invited a few years of vehicles into the program, mm-hmm. and didn't really address the clunkers that were out there.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted a few people with a few different types of cars to turn their vehicle in to get more of a gas-saving car, which they did. They mm-hmm. bought newer cars.
Yeah.
But the cars they were trading in on the clunker program weren't clunkers.
Okay. What were they?
The clunker program should have included vehicles that were non-computer controlled. Those are the clunkers.
I see. Okay. Well, speaking of computers, has that made your life, that transition to automation... Before, when I was working on cars, computers weren't even a conversation. What has that been, the transition been like for you? Was it a tough one? Is it, do you have to be computer literate to be able to work on a car now? Do you have to have special?
Yeah, you have to be electronically literate. You don't necessarily have to be computer literate.
Mm-hmm.
But we've worked years on a lot of the German stuff with mm-hmm. fuel injection.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were computer controlled back in the 60s.
Hmm. Germans being the Volkswagen?
The Volkswagen.
Okay. Okay.
So it was not a big change for us to go from the non-computer cars to the fully computered cars. Although the American market, a lot of the market, I shouldn't say just the American market, but a lot of the market, failed the public by beating carburetors to death as long as they did. When the Germans had the computerization, they also had fuel injection.
Mm-hmm.
And the computer basically metered the fuel injection. The American market, a lot of the European, a lot of the Japanese market, continually beat that carburetor to death until it was so overpriced, so problematic, that they were forced into going to fuel injection. But by the time they got around to it, we'd already been dealing with the fuel injection on the German vehicles for years already. So it's not a big step for us.
But you were dealing with fuel injection. I don't remember Volkswagens as being automated.
You mean with the fuel injection?
Right, yeah.
Square backs, fast backs. That's where it started.
Okay, not the Bug.
The Beetle, no. The Beetle didn't do that until early, about the mid-70s.
Okay.
The fast backs and the square backs.
Got it, okay.
The 411s and the 512s, they all had it.
Okay, got it.
And then Porsche had them, too.
Okay, Porsche. And so you used to work on Porsches, too?
We used to do the 911s, the 914s, yes.
Really? Wow. Wow. So right now, what is your most common repair, most common kind of car to repair now, and what was it when you first opened up?
Most common car to repair here now is probably a lot of the Japanese makes,
mm-hmm.
Whether it be Nissan, Toyota, Honda, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And back in the old days, I mean, we did a lot of General Motors, a lot of Fords, a lot of Mercuries,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the American car market.
Huh.
But we did have a specialty market in the Volkswagens.
Yeah.
And we did those for many years until the writing on the wall says these aren't going to make it much longer because of the air-cooled and smog restrictions.
Hmm.
But then a lot of the Japanese market was coming into view and making
mm-hmm.
a big step,
mm-hmm.
Changing design, making them more friendly to a U.S. market.
Mm-hmm.
More and more people were starting to get away from the air-cooled and going with the water pumper
mm-hmm.
engines.
Hmm.
They were quieter, okay. more horsepower, and you got heat whenever you wanted.
Mm-hmm. I've seen how you work, and I'm in awe of your skills, your composure. I'm just always blown away. I've been sitting in that bus on your lot working and looking out the window, and I'll see. It seems like 10 customers coming at you one time with their repairs. And you say, okay, bring it on. And you're fixing all these different things at once. I'm going, holy criminy, you know.
Well,
and
you got to juggle stuff sometimes.
I think my circuits would be fully blown. You know, you'll work on one for a while, then you kind of get tired, I can't figure this out, and you'll work on getting something, and they're all done at the end of the day. And it
you're
always
right.
blows my mind. Now, looking at that,
we can't get a steady stream of parts. So sometimes we have to work on one for a period of time,
uh-huh.
find out what it needs, order parts, and then have to start on something else.
Yeah.
Until we can get parts.
Okay, so let me just explain for those listening. When he says that, what he means by a steady stream of parts is Don has a regular people regularly deliver parts to him from the parts stores and things like that. What's the closest parts store to you? Somewhere in Mountain View?
Our closest parts store is probably 7 or 8 miles as the crow flies from us.
Hmm. And yet there used to be a lot of them in Palo Alto, I would expect.
Used to be probably 15,
oh my
15
God.
Or 20 parts stores,
wow.
including dealerships.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But they've all been priced out of the market here
right.
for the high high price of property.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all gone now.
Wow. Looking back and looking forward at the same time, do you see a future for someone starting out in car repair?
If they do, they're going to probably have to specialize in one or two selected varieties and be very good on those varieties. And if they're good on that variety, they'll get all the business that they need.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's like what the world is anymore. It's become about specialization.
Yes, a dinosaur like myself and Dennis that worked on, Toyotas, mm-hmm. Nissan, Subarus, Simcas, Vauxhalls, old Morris Minors,
Buicks,
Buicks, Pontiac, Oldsmobiles, Ramblers,
Ramblers. Oh, my God.
We're a dying breed.
Don't forget Austin Healey and
yes.
all those wild cars and Triumphs.
Yeah.
Da.
Cortinas. Don't forget Cortinas.
Well, how about that one car you got in your for sale, the one that the brown one?
Oh, the Mitsubishi.
Mitsubishi. But what kind of Mitsubishi that is? A
Mitsubishi Starion.
A Starion, but it's also a fuel-injected turbo.
Turbocharged.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And it really looks a lot better since you washed it.
Oh, really? Okay. Got it. All right. As well, looking back, Don, what has given you the most gratitude in your work? What kinds of things have, when you go home at the end of the day, what makes you feel good about what you've done there for all those years on Park Avenue?
I've taken care of my customers. I'm taking care of my friends and family.
Awesome. And any special car that you like to work on, or any kind of thing that gives you kind of great joy to kind of be able to, a problem that you solve that makes you just, you looking back, has there been anything that really stands out, any repair that you just, wow, I did that, I can't believe I fixed that? And
I'll be honest with you, I just can't recall. There's been a lot of them, but I just
it all just blends in, huh?
It all just blends in from one day to the next.
Awesome. Well, Don, is there anything, we pretty much to where we need to wrap up, is there anything you'd like to add?
I don't think. I think we've covered just about all the bases.
All right. Okay, Don. Well, see, this has been awesome, and I want my listeners to know this. We're talking to a legend. This guy is like a final postscript. Are you the oldest? Do you know of anybody who's been in business longer than you on Park Avenue, Park Boulevard?
I've been here longer than anybody on the boulevard.
Wow. Wow. Awesome. Quite awesome, Don. Thank you. And
I
thank you.
It.
And we'll talk again soon, guy.
Okay. Take care.
Okay, Don. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.